You should go back. That's what they want. They want you to go back. So then, Krishna became so struck by the statements of Uddhava, he became speechless. And he thought of going back. But then he saw Devaki and Rukmini knew that he was thinking of going back. And he thought, if I leave Dwarka, what is going to happen to them? They may enter the same state. So Krishna became confused. And he thought, he said, pass me a pen and paper, I will write another letter. Not a very good suggestion, really. But this is what he thought under the circumstances. He was confused. He said, give me a pen and paper. I'll write them a letter saying I just have a little outstanding business I still have to settle in Mathura, and then I'll come. But Uddhava, understanding this, begged him, please, just go now, immediately. Otherwise they may not survive. So then, Padmavati says, I have it figured out. Now I understand. These bridge busses have bribed Uddhava with milk products. So he will arrange that Krishna comes back to look after their cows. I have heard they have been finding it hard to get people to go out into the dangerous forest with the cows. But Krishna, he was happily doing it. That's what they want. They want him to go back to herd the cows in the dangerous forest. So then, Rohini, sympathetic to the bridge busses, tries to argue with Padmavati. Everyone else has ignored Padmavati. Rohini, who cannot bear this criticism of the bridge busses, that they're just trying to exploit Krishna as free labor, she tries to argue with Padmavati that when Krishna was in Vrindavan, they loved him so much that they couldn't even live for a moment if he hid behind a tree while playing. They almost died. When he went out to herd the cows, then everyone who was left in the village, somehow they got through the day. But it was like a lifetime. So, she explains that they're not hard-hearted people who are trying to exploit Krishna. They're actually very nice. Let me just read a little bit of what she says here. So she says, oh, virtuous lady. She's speaking to Padmavati. She's being sarcastic. Oh, virtuous lady, if trees or other obstacles blocked Krishna from sight even briefly, his companions at once shed tears and called out anxiously, oh, Krishna, Krishna. For those who live in Vraja, daytime is like the black night at the end of the universe when Krishna's out herding the cows, because then those in the village don't see him. So it's like the black night at the end of the universe, millions of years, billions of years. And the blink of an eye is like a millennium. Radharani complained like that. When I blink, I can't see Krishna. This is extremely bad. In such a state, they look at the sun and the trails of dust on the road again and again and listen for the sound of the flute. Every day, Krishna takes his elder brother with him and goes out into the various forests for his pleasure, not as forced labor. He is eager to enjoy with his herds of cows and wander about in the company of his many friends. In these forests, it's not like they're horrible forests with thorns and... But there are lakes with sparkling waters and beautiful lotuses, beautiful trees and bees and birds. And it's very picturesque. There are many different charming animals. They're not dangerous animals. They've put all their natural enmity aside. And such a beautiful scene. Such a beautiful scene. It is not that Krishna was suffering there, forced to herd the cows, struggling in the horrible forest. And Padmavati says to Rohini, "You child, you are too free with your words. If what you say is true, then why do we hear that the cows and other animals in Vraja are now in danger of dying because no one is taking care of them? They're dying in separation from Krishna, actually." But she thinks that these people, they can't find anyone now that Krishna's gone to look after the cows. Therefore, they want him back for more cheap, free laboring work. So, Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, hearing all these things, it is becoming too much. It's becoming too much, really. So, scorching anxiety dried up Krishna's lotus face. He was filled with dread. He glanced at the face of Lord Balaram, who knew the latest news from Vrindavan because he was recently there. And he saw that Lord Balaram's face was covered with tears. Lord Balaram was crying uncontrollably. And Krishna asked him, "You please describe the situation there now." So Lord Balaram said, "Why speak only about the cows, dear Krishna? All the animals in Vraja are your beloved friends, and so also are the birds and the trees, like the bandira and the kadamba, the grass, the creepers, the lush bushes have all dedicated their lives to you. Now they're all wasting away, and so too are the rivers and mountains. Some of the people, dear brother, live only on the hope that your promises were true to come back. Better you not ask to hear more news than this. The implication that some of the people live only on the hope that your promises are true, the implication is that some of them are not living. Some of them have already left this world out of separation from Krishna." So he says, "Better you not ask more news than this. I can only tell you that if you don't show your kindness to them soon, Yamaraj will soon show them his. That you rid Kaliya's lake of its poison has only greatened their misery." Why? Because now they cannot commit suicide. "Now, please hear of still other reasons for their sorrow. In Vraja, the river Yamuna has turned so dry, she has hardly any water. And Govardhan, who when you held him up, touched heaven, has now become short. The devotees who relish the nectar of your names cannot die of starvation. Instead, their end will come in a fire in a great dry forest. All the forests are dry in separation from Krishna. So Lord Balaram is expecting any time they'll just burst into flame and all the Brijbasis living in the forest will die. Having heard this, Krishna, who is gentle by nature and tormented by the suffering of others, grasped Balaram by the neck and shed a flood of tears like a person whose life is in ruin. As he cried with loud sobs in his beautiful voice, the tears washed away the cosmetics from his body. Dear Mother, he and Balaram then rolled on the ground and for a moment lost consciousness. Seeing the two lords in such unprecedented crying and lamentation, all the residents of the inner palace lost control of themselves. Rohini, Uddhava, Devaki, Rukmini, Satyabhama, and all the rest, they all lost control and sobbed again and again. When the Yadus, all the ones who were out waiting in the Sudharma assembly hall and in other places, when the Yadus heard from the inner palace the sound of distressed crying, never heard there before, they quickly came running, headed by Vasudev and Ugrasena. The Brahmins arrived, led by Garga, along with all the other people of the city. And when they saw their beloved master in this extraordinary state, as they never had before, they too began to cry, overwhelmed. So now we have millions of people crying and crying and crying. The general populace of Dwarka, everyone was just completely overwhelmed, to the point that Lord Brahma comes from Brahmaloka to see what's happening. But that we'll talk about tomorrow. That's chapter 7. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So yesterday, Narada Muni was in Dwarka and meeting with Uddhava and various other devotees and even Lord Balaram himself and even Lord Krishna himself, and getting introduced to the subject of who really has the greatest mercy from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So there was a big, almost like a debate, big discussion at least. What should Krishna do? The inhabitants of Vrindavan cannot go on any longer separated from Krishna. So what can be done? Some were saying that Krishna must go back there.
others were saying that he must do something of it, but preferably not go back there. And he couldn't even decide, so he thought of writing another letter, which wasn't a very well-received idea. So, finally, he asked Lord Balaram, who had very recently been there, he asked him, what is it really like there now? What is your report? And Lord Balaram said that it is just terrible. It is really just terrible. And he broke down, and Krishna broke down, and everyone there broke down, and then all the people waiting in the Sudharma assembly hall came in, and when they saw this incredible display of transcendental emotion, they broke down, and then all the citizens of the city, however many millions or billions of them there were, they also broke down. And so there was this terrible crying coming from Dwarka. And it was so powerful, it started echoing throughout the entire universe. We mentioned the other day how in the Bhagavatam there's one verse which says that the number of teachers that were there for the Yadu children was 38,800,000. Sridhar Swami says that's a conservative estimate. Well, in the Krishna books, Prabhupada says that Maharaj Ugrasena had 4 quadrillion personal bodyguards. So in other words, there was a lot of people there in Dwarka, and everyone was crying and wailing and sobbing. What a sin. So the sounds of lamentation, Dwarka, they spread throughout the entire universe. Bad omens appeared, and Lord Brahma heard. So Lord Brahma came with various of the leading demigods, the personified, various of the personified Vedic scriptures, personified Puranas and other great personalities. They all came, and when he saw that situation, then, because he has been in Vrindavan, so he knows these types of things are not normally revealed, but he had had at least a glimpse before. So he thought, oh, something very special is going on here. What is going on here is related to something that is normally hidden. So he also began crying, remembering how he stole the cowherd boys and that whole incident. His realizations from stealing the cowherd boys became deeper. So Lord Brahma, though, being very sober and a great philosopher, he quickly pulled himself together and made a plan. Somehow he very quickly got Vishvakarma, the architect of the demigods, to construct New Vrindavan, not in West Virginia, but in Dwarka, just near the city, just near the palace. Vishvakarma very quickly constructed New Vrindavan. And everything was there. They managed to get virtually all the trees, different types of trees. They managed to get cows. They managed to get different animals. The only things they couldn't get were the people, because they were in Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan. So Vishvakarma He made statues of all the people. So there's a statue of Nanda Maharaj, statue of Mother Yashoda, Srimati Radharani, and all the other cowherd people, cowherd boys, cowherd girls, although they were real cows. But the human beings, they were all statues. Except that Rohini was there. She is a resident of both Dwaraka and Vrindavan. So he wanted her to personally take part in the next phase of this remarkable narration. So he quickly tried to revive Garuda. Garuda, like everyone else, Garuda is the bird carrier of Krishna. Like everyone else, he was unconscious. Krishna, Balaram, everyone, they're all unconscious now, being too overwhelmed emotionally. So they're all unconscious. But Lord Brahma, with a great effort, he revived Garuda and told him, take Krishna and Balaram there in their present state and Rohini, but no one else. And he explained about the statues. So Garuda carefully put Krishna and Balaram on his back and Rohini, the three of them, and took them to Navavrindavan, New Vrindavan. On the way there, Lord Balaram began to regain consciousness. So when they landed in Navavrindavan, New Vrindavan, Balaram was almost in normal consciousness, but not quite, but he was getting there. So he was able to help Garuda take Krishna off his back and lay him down on a bed, which they then quickly surrounded with cowherd people statues. Uddhava and the other residents of Dwaraka came, but they were hiding. And Narada Muni came, but Narada was feeling so embarrassed. Narada was feeling so bad that I have caused this chaos. It's my fault. If I had just listened to Uddhava and somehow or other stopped talking about the inhabitants of Vrindavan and stopped him talking about them, it would never have come to this. So he was in the sky, watching from the sky. He wanted to keep some distance. And Garuda also went up into the sky, shading Krishna with his wings from the sun. So Balaram was almost in full consciousness. He understood the plan of Lord Brahma. He cleaned himself and he cleaned Krishna. And while Krishna was still unconscious, he dressed him as a cowherd boy, complete with peacock feather, turban, flute, rope for tying the cows, kadamba flower garland, gunja earrings, everything, so that Krishna looked like just how he looked in Vrindavan. Exactly. So then he urged Krishna, you must wake up. It's late. The cows want to go out. Sridharam and the cowherd boys are waiting for you. Your parents, they're here, but they're so filled with love for you that they can't speak. Also, they happen to be statues who can't speak, but this is the way he presents it. And the gopis are looking at you and laughing at you. So, with great difficulty, he woke Krishna up. Krishna got up in a very
kind of, you know, dazed condition, chanting Shiva, Shiva, Shiva. So Krishna got up, stood up, looked around, and became surprised. He saw Nanda Maharaj and bowed down to him. He saw Mother Yashoda looking at him, unblinking, and lovingly told her, "My dear mother, this morning I had the most amazing dream. It was practically like reality. I dreamed that I left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, and I fought many kings, and I built a city in Dwarka. And that is why I got up so late. I'm really sorry." Yes. He told Balaram, "It's all right. I'll explain to you later." The same thing. So, he was starting to talk and interact with Mother Yashoda, the statue, who was just standing there unblinking. So Rohini, who had also come back to consciousness, she quickly intervened, saying that your mother is in anxiety because you overslept such a long time. She's very worried about you, so you should go now. The cows and the boys are waiting, and I'll prepare refreshments and we'll bring them to you in the forest later. Mother Yashoda, the statue, was holding some butter. Soon as Mother Rohini turned her back, Krishna grabbed the butter out of Yashoda's hands and laughed and went away. Then he met the gopis. First of all, Chandravali and her friends, and he had some witty exchanges with them, joking a little bit back and forth. Then he met Srimati Radharani and his mood changed. He spoke to her, but she wouldn't reply. He appealed to her, "Have I offended you?" And then he became worried. He thought, she is omniscient. Maybe she knows about my dream. And she's feeling angry that I've been associating with some other women. And I've left her, and now she's become disturbed. So, he kissed her, threw a handful of flowers to her, told her, "Don't worry, we will meet this evening," and embraced her and kissed her again, and then went. So the queens, watching this from behind the trees somewhere in hiding, and Devaki, and even Padmavati, they become very astonished. They've never seen loving exchanges so deep. They've never felt anything so deep themselves. Mother Devaki, even though she is an old lady now, she is about, she must be about 120, at least, something like that. So she's way past the age when women would normally have children, but milk started coming from her breasts, and Rukmini and the other queens became bewildered by the increase of intensity of their own love and their own attraction towards Krishna, and many of them fainted except for Padmavati and Satyabhama. They both became overwhelmed with conjugal feelings and acted out as if they were embracing and kissing Krishna. Then suddenly they both ran to catch Krishna. But Kalindi, she's another one of Krishna's wives in Dwarka, but she has also been in Vrindavan. She and Uddhava, who had also, of course, been in Vrindavan, and who are kind of, at least they were a little more experienced in these things,